This is FCB Radio, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbradio.com.
Todd Allen Radio, turn your speakers up, let's go.
Hello, folks, and welcome. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen, in remote studios with Ashley Herzog. Ashley, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Outstanding, outstanding. Dario Kingpin Murrow, how you doing?
What's going on, man? Taking this good old shot of Mountain Dew real quick so I can get some energy.
Oh, so that's what we're calling it now.
No, it's actually Mountain Dew, people.
Uh-huh.
It's not anything alcoholic. I just need something with a little... kicking it, man, because my allergies is beating me up today.
Ashley, do you believe him?
Actually, yes, I do.
And you know why she believes me, Todd? Not only because I am a genuine and honest person who has never lied to Ashley ever. Not only that, but because I think Ashley knows me well enough, and she can say that she can attest to this. She knows me well enough to know that if I was drinking, I would just tell you I was drinking.
Yeah, I think you would just sitting on the air. He doesn't have any shame.
Exactly.
Well, I'm drinking my concoction of loose teas, spearmint tea, and hibiscus tea. So, yeah, I'm a teetotaler. Yeah,
look at Mr. Bougie.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said before, I'm very self-aware. I'm bougie, I'm petty, and I'm shallow.
So. I respect your honesty.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the show. Rona, new developments in Ohio, Michigan is still on lockdown. In Maine, the governor there is officially, in my view, has lost her mind. And here in Ohio, we see that there is a lessening, I would say, of restrictions. I think the governor went from stay at home to stay safe. And so,
yeah, that's what it's called now. Yeah,
it's called stay safe. And so I saw a lot more people. It seemed like the block was hot today when I was out on my 3-mile walk. What are you seeing, Ashley?
I'm seeing a lot more people outdoors, and also it's stores. I drove past Home Depot the other day, or yesterday, actually. I was going to the grocery store because I had to, and it was packed. I have never seen, I mean, this was not, like, any different than, like, you would expect on a typical weekend in May when people are getting ready to do, like, home projects in the summer. It was full, and honestly, the grocery store was pretty packed too. So yeah. I think people are, well, as Ann Coulter has pointed out in her column several times, we've been self-isolating for like 6 weeks almost, in some states longer. That means not going to work. That means not going to social gatherings. A lot of people not seeing any of your friends or family. So we should know by now if we have it. I mean, you know, if we've been self-isolating at home for this long, we should either social distance or either stay-at-home orders don't work, mm-hmm. or none of us should have it. So right. We should know by now. Yeah, I agree with her somewhat on that. It is time to start loosening, but not too much, because you don't want a huge resurgence.
How do you define too much, though?
I think you need to use common sense. Do I think that we need to have indoor gatherings like concerts and things like that with a ton of people where it's really confined, close quarters, and people right on top of each other? No.
Hell no.
No. But can people, like, start going to retail stores if they only let, like, you know, a certain number of people into the store at a time? Can people go sit at outdoor restaurants as long as they're 6 feet apart? I think so.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Darvio?
So I personally, I believe the state of Ohio the entire time has handled this the right way from the very beginning. I believe that what we're doing now is the right course of action, because we are starting to loosen up the restrictions a little bit, but we're not going too fast, because that is a concern of mine as well. And not only just because you don't want to have a resurgence, but if everybody is so concerned about the economy, well, the worst thing you could do is rush to take all the restrictions off too quickly, get a spike, and then you have to shut down again. That would be devastating for the economy. And we've already started to see that in certain in different places around the world. So I think Ohio is doing it the exact right way.
Well, I think during the course of this whole process, we've kind of lost sight, and certain governors have lost sight as to why the initial lockdown or stay in place was put in place to begin with. We were told at the beginning it was to lessen the curve or to shorten the curve.
Stop the spread.
Flatten the curve.
To flatten the curve. And now it's not flatten the curve, because we basically have done that, because there are some hospitals where there are whole floor, that when they're furloughing nurses and doctors because they've closed certain types of floors or wings of a hospital. I mean, the curve has been flattened. If you look in New York, look at New York for example. I mean, the governor said, we need 30,000 respirators. He said, Donald Trump said, I don't know if you need that many. Well, yeah, we need 30,000 respirators. Okay, let's send a hospital ship there and take care of other, take care of the patients. In 2 weeks that they were there, or 3 weeks that they were there, they saw less than 200 patients. So now the lockdown is not so much let's flatten the curve. It's, well, we don't want people to get sick, and we're going to kind of, see what we can do until there's a vaccine that's found.
Well, I haven't heard anybody crazy enough to say that we're going to keep things shut down until a vaccine. Like,
I've heard people say that.
Well, that's nuts. That is nuts.
And that's kind of what the governor of Maine is saying.
Yeah, no, that's nuts. No, nobody would accept being on lockdown that long. Like that, because you're still talking. Now, I know that the Trump administration and other administrations around the world are doing a moonshot deal where they're trying to get a vaccine as quickly as possible. They want it by the fall, which if it happens, would be the fastest vaccine development and brought to market ever.
What are the chances of that?
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't know. So I know they're trying to do that. But if that doesn't work, this is typically a 12 to 18 month process. And nobody is going to, even though I think the protests are stupid, nobody's going to tolerate being shut down that damn long. Like, that's just not practical. So anybody who thinks that, you're going to have to come up with another way, because nobody's going to do that.
Well, we also see that, I think it was California, correct me if I'm wrong, that it was one vote away from letting out a known rapist or murderer out of jail. But if you want to protest and, not be socially distanced, you're going to go to jail. But if you're a murderer or a rapist, they're going to let you out because of COVID?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's been, and I think, like you were starting to say, yes, the initial goal was to flatten the curve, and no state should be compared to New York. New York is an exception in this whole thing. Not even California can be compared to New York. Obviously, they have been the hardest hit.
Yeah.
We did flatten the curve, and hospitals have not run, even come close to running out of ventilators. They're not even close to being at capacity. So that part was accomplished.
Right.
Now we're talking about, I guess, this threat of a resurgence, and I know that it is a threat and it could happen, but I think at some point you do have to balance the risks with the other risks of people are going to be sitting at home drinking, doing drugs. We've already seen that. There's been a spike in domestic violence cases because women have nowhere to go to get away. Men are, abusive men are probably sitting at home drinking. Kids are at home with abusive parents. I mean, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They'll say, you just want people to die. No, people are going to die from other causes. They're also afraid to go to the doctor or hospital. So I think that we do have to weigh, like, what are the benefits of allowing this to go on and on and on. And I think Ohio is moving at the right pace. We're going to start opening retail stores on May 12th so that people can go in. And as long as I think it'll be up to the store whether to require masks, but there'll only be like a certain number of people allowed in. But yeah. I think we are doing the right thing.
Well, Ohio at this point has 19,335 confirmed cases. What's interesting to me is that when they're talking about new cases, they will give the top line number, but they're not really giving you the daily increase or the weekly increase or the monthly increase of those numbers. And so we don't know if those numbers have really slowed, if you will. I mean, we just see that 19,335 people in the state of Ohio, right? And that's a hotspot, really. I mean, if you look at the size of Ohio and 19,000, that's a hotspot. Cuyahoga County in particular, right?
Yes.
Many of us live. But when they're giving that number, they're not telling you the daily increase, right? They're just giving you the top line number.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Are politicians using fear to wield their power and to maintain this semblance of leadership?
So we have less than a minute left, but when we come back, I want to jump on that. I want to address that, but we got to go to break.
Okay, folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, 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 what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we rock to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, how can our listeners follow you?
You can find me on Facebook as myself, Ashley Herzog, and on Instagram as AshleyHerzog85.
Darby, you?
At D the Kingpin on all social media platforms, DTheKingpin.
And folks, you can follow us on all social media platforms, The Todd Allen, Allyn Show. Before we went to break, Darvio, I had a question. And I'm talking about do politicians use fear to maintain to cause people to view them as being positive leaders in this pandemic? What are your thoughts?
So I think the average for the average governor, no governor wants to have to deal with this crap. Like that's just my view.
I want to remind you that they said don't let a good emergency go to waste.
Yeah, I understand that, and you know, y'all quote that 100 times every other month. But my point is, the average governor, yes, there's some nutbags, but the average governor doesn't want to have to deal with this because it's a no-win situation. Because either way, you know, people are going to say you're moving too fast, you're not moving fast enough. You know, you're going to be criticized no matter what. So I think the average politician, because if anything else, most politicians are generally risk averse when it comes to impacting their political futures. We know this. I don't think the average politician is enjoying any of this. But I think one thing that we have to remember about this particular thing, because it's so easy to compare it to other stuff and be like, well, you know, people are going to die from this and people are going to die from that. The problem with this thing in particular is We don't have a vaccine for it. It's highly contagious, and we still know very little about it. We don't know. We damn near don't know anything about this thing. You know what I'm saying? There's so much of this stuff that even some of the assumptions that we thought we knew when we saw how it hit in other countries, like how it was going to hit the elderly and so on and so forth, we knew that. But then when you get here, you start seeing, oh, it's some people who are not necessarily elderly who are getting hit by it as well. We interviewed one of the Cuyahoga County medical examiners on the Jeff Brown Show earlier this week, and he made a very interesting point that he believes the numbers are undercounted and underreported. And one of the things that he said was that for them in the medical examiner's office, there were a lot of people who died that they weren't allowed to test the people who were already dead. because weren't enough tests for them to be able to do that. So he believes that the medical examiner believes that the numbers are actually underreported. So there's so many different things going on. There's so many different missing pieces. And I think I said this on your show or on another show, that one of the most difficult things for the human psyche to accept is the answer of I don't know. And there's still a lot of stuff that we just don't know. And so a lot of politicians, they're going to make mistakes because they don't know either. You know, they have to project strength and confidence and all of that. But there's a lot of stuff about this that we don't know. Now, have there been some governors that have overreached? Absolutely. The governor of Michigan is definitely one of them.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she's definitely one of them that has overreached. And that is dangerous when you have someone in power overreach, because what it does is it destroys the confidence that the people have in their leadership, and then they just stop listening altogether.
Well, you can tell when they're overreaching, because she immediately backtracked on some of the stuff that
correct
she had in place. And then correct, as soon as there were protests, as soon as a little bit of pressure was applied, she canceled it. She backed away and said, okay, well,
yeah.
She was not going to let anyone from Michigan drive to, and a lot of people there, because I used to live up in Michigan, people from downstate, as they call it, like Detroit area or the bigger cities, have second homes or cottages, what they call up north in northern
mm-hmm.
Michigan,
mm-hmm.
or hunting cabins, stuff like that. And so she was telling people they could not drive from their homes to their other home. So two properties that they own, pay taxes on, even if they follow all the social distancing rules, even if they're out in the middle of nowhere, that they can't go to their own house. And the second that she got a little bit of pushback, she backed off that and a couple other things. So that tells you.
Yeah, that's stupid. Yeah, that was stupid.
If a governor is very sure that that something is a good idea, they usually won't. And they know that it's going to be disastrous if they backtrack. It won't matter if they protest. Like, they can protest all they want. They're still going to
ride it out. Yep.
So she was. Yep. I think that woman, Gretchen Whitmer, was just sort of on a power trip. As much as I hate to say that, I think she was.
Well, I think that personally, I think that even if it's the health concern, I think that for the most part, and I'm going to include the governor of state of Ohio, and to your point, Darvio, you know, there's a lot that's just not unknown. But I think that sometimes they're overreaching because they have the authority and the power to do so, right?
I don't feel that with Governor DeWine, though. I don't. Nothing he's done, I don't believe he's overreached.
And I think that in the beginning, I mean, people accepted it in the beginning, but then when things continue, when they want to continue to add on without necessarily giving a rationale. For example, okay, the curve is flattened. Okay, well, can we loosen now? Well, no, I don't think it's quite ready just yet. Well, initially you said that we need to flatten the curve, correct? Yes. So why did you extend an additional 2 weeks to a month?
Well, because you can't pull everything out all at once. That's the thing that people aren't understanding. Like, even in our state, we are starting to open, but you can't just pull it all out all willy-nilly at one time. That would be disastrous.
Well, the point is, you can't say that you don't know and then say you can't do something.
Well, I mean, everybody's taking their best. Everybody's, well, I'll put it like this. I can't speak for everybody, but I know our governor and our administration here in Ohio, they're trying to make their best, the best decisions with the information that they know at the time.
To swing everything
open would be, you'd have people packed in bars. You'd have people packed in all, like, we already saw this.
Yeah.
We saw this the week before St. Patrick's Day, remember? But when he, before he shut down the, stopped letting people go into bars and restaurants, he was begging people, the governor of Ohio was begging people, please stay your bleep at home. And
yeah.
That Saturday, the Saturday before St. Patrick's Day, they were packing the bars up. So he's like, all right, well, I got to shut it down.
Well, I mean, this wasn't across the entire state. Yes. I mean, there were some places. I mean, there's going to be people who violate. We call it civil disobedience or whatever it is that you want to call it. But people in the beginning willfully abdicated their rights. All right. And then there becomes a point where, you know what? I want to maintain my rights. But at what point do you say, OK, well, you know, at this particular point in an emergency, you have no constitutional rights. That's not the United States of America. And
but here's the problem. Politicians
ahead, have Todd. To remember that they are employees of the people.
Here's the thing that drives me nuts about that argument, though. No sane person who actually understands the law is arguing that these governors are doing anything illegal. They're doing everything that they're doing. They have the right and authority to do so. No, so when people say, "Oh, they're taking my rights away," no, they're not. There's certain things that's being suspended at this particular time because we're in a state of emergency, but those things are going to be restored back. We're not going to be like this forever.
Well,
and that's the thing that drives me nuts. Like, oh, my freedom.
I understand when you say it's not going to be forever, right? But when you leave it open-ended, right? When you leave it open-ended, therein lies the problem. It's open-ended. There is no targeted date in place, and that becomes the problem. Because if you cannot say on one hand that no one knows, I don't know. Okay, if you don't know, then at least give me a targeted date in which we're going to try to figure this out. But if you leave it open ended and say, well, you're going to have to abdicate your rights for as long as it takes or until we get a vaccine, that's what some governors have said. And when you talk about the constitutional rights of people and them abdicating those rights, I've heard some governors talk about, hey, well, you know, I'm not even talking about the constitutional right. What rights? I've heard that said. So I'm not for or against. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, at the end of the day, I believe that a lot of people who are governors at this particular point in time and have gone through this horrendous ordeal will not be in power come next time election.
But here and if those are the people that made the right decisions, that will be a travesty of justice. And it will be another example of we get the government that we deserve.
Well,
because there have been a lot of people who have made good decisions. There's been a lot of people that have made bad decisions. And I do not believe that the Constitution is a suicide pact. So
my point is this, that when one person believes that they made a good decision, another person may believe that they did not. And
you have people out here protesting because they want to be able to go get their hair done. Come on, man.
Do they have that right to do that?
Are we this spoiled? Are we this spoiled? Like, this is like, there's some of these arguments that are just ridiculous to me.
Darville, the Constitution of the United States permits you to be a butthole.
But here's the thing, though. That's funny and accurate. That's very true. But the problem that I have with this is, again, most people, unless you're a nut, most people are not arguing that the governors are doing anything illegal. You may not like it. You may feel like there's certain things you can't do that you should be able to do, but they have the right to do what they're doing. The executives have the right to do what they're doing. It's in the state constitutions of damn near all of these states across the country. Like, these, they have the right to do what they're doing. So it's they're taking my rights away.
There have been legal
Yeah, there's been constitutional cases. Arguments. Yes.
Of course. Well, there's constitutional arguments about everything. So true. That, you know what I mean? Like, there's constitutional arguments about everything. So that's not out of the ordinary.
Darby, I see that you're very passionate about that.
Well, I'm passionate about this particular part, man, because I feel like I understand. Look, no, this can't be open-ended. I agree with you on that. People talking about this, that we're going to do this until we get a vaccine, that's crazy.
Well, some people are talking about that. Yeah, I think that we need crazy. To have this. No, and I think it's very valid to have a discussion about how much is too much and how long is too long. And there's some people out there, mostly liberals, who don't want us to have that discussion at all.
I think it's fair to have the discussion. I agree with you there. But I think just some of these arguments that people are making are either like not logically sound or just ridiculous. And that's what I'm passionate about. I do think it's fair. I think it's perfectly fair to have a conversation about how long is too long. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But some of these arguments that people are making, man, is just ridiculous to me. And Todd, we got to go to break.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
The iHeartRadio app is...
It's like it knows exactly what I like.
I don't have to think about it. It's just tap here, tap there.
I don't even need a whole bunch of apps. Everything right there.
It's free.
All free.
That's a good one.
Some of these apps are crazy.
You know what's funny? I didn't even know I liked podcasts, but then I saw them like all over the apps.
We listen in the car.
Whenever, wherever.
In my pocket, wherever I go.
I love it.
The iHeartRadio app. Radio, music, podcasts, all free. Free never sounded better. Download the iHeartRadio app today.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. We're going to go into our really segment at this time, and we're going to have Ashley take it away for us. So this is Really.
Really.
All right. I want to talk about something, and we are broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. I know we have listeners in various parts of the country, but we're all from Cleveland, and this story is actually coming out of Michigan. Michigan senator, let me get his name here, Dale Zorn, decided it would be a good idea to go to a protest with a Confederate flag face mask on. Saying it was part of, saying that it was part of, quote unquote, our history, which is his first mistake. So let's talk about this. Okay. So, oh no, he didn't wear it to a protest. He wore it to a Senate vote at the state capitol in Lansing.
Oh my God, I didn't see that part.
Yeah. Michigan State Senator Dale Zorn wore the mask during a Senate vote at the state capitol in Lansing on Friday. He initially defended his action, saying his wife had made the mask, and that it depicts the flag of Tennessee or Kentucky. No. No. No kidding. They probably have Confederate flags in their state flag. I don't know that they do. I know that it's an issue with some. Yeah, so there's a... picture of this guy sitting here with his Confederate flag mask on. And of course he looks like he's about 80. He's probably 75 or 80. Very overweight, balding white guy. Okay. So let's chat. First of all, this our history thing, it is absolutely not part of our history. If you're talking about Michigan or Ohio, the South, once again, as I've already said on this show many times, I think, the South, first of all, the Confederacy were officially, by all definitions of the word, they were traitors to the U.S. They were not happy with the fact that Abraham Lincoln wanted to abolish slavery. They were not content to, you know, to give people their freedom and try to modernize their economy. So they decided they were going to secede and start something better. And they did not succeed. That's what I was thinking of in my head. They failed miserably. they did all right. They made some inroads for the first 2 years. By the third year of the Civil War, they were being absolutely crushed by the North. It was a horrible idea for them to ever drag the country into this war. They had no chance of winning. All of the obviously superior manpower and most of the manufacturing was in the North because the South decided to hold on to this very outdated agrarian economy when everyone else was modernizing and becoming industrial. So first of all, they're traitors to the United States. You cannot wear a Confederate flag and call yourself a patriot. And anyone who tries is really just doing mental gymnastics. I don't know how they can work that out in their heads that you can be loyal to the U.S. while literally wearing a flag of an enemy government. I have read some defenses of the Confederate flag, and a lot of people say it's all about celebrating Southern pride and Southern heritage. Well, clearly it's not, because we've got this 80-year-old guy in Michigan sitting with the Confederate flag on. Honestly, I saw more Confederate flags in rural parts of Ohio when I went to OU, in rural parts of Michigan when I lived up there. When I would go up to northern Michigan, we'd drive through these little towns out in the middle of nowhere, and there'd be Confederate flags everywhere. So it's nothing to do with being proud of being from the South. Ann Coulter said, oh, it's just about acknowledging what great fighters they were. First of all, they lost, so they weren't that good. Second, I'm sure that, the Viet Cong and, Nazi Germany had some great fighters, too. It doesn't mean we march around with their flags and celebrate it. What kind of argument is that? third, I don't know if these people, if this guy like Dale Zorn has ever been down South, but they don't want you. They hate Northerners. They're really, truly backwards, redneck. If you've ever met any of them, dyed-in-the-wool Southerners do not want anything to do with Michigan or Detroit or any, they really are about their Southern pride, and they're very closed off to outsiders. They don't like Catholics. They don't like Hispanics. They don't like Black. They pretty much don't like anyone unless you're part of their immediate family, which everyone in their towns are. So, or your third cousin who you're married to, who knows? So this whole thing, it makes no sense whatsoever. It needs to go away. Stop wearing, parading around, carrying the Confederate flag. I'm sick of it. I don't want to see it. There's no valid defense for it. I've never heard a good argument for why it should still be around. It needs to just be tossed on the ash heap of history. That's my rant for the day.
Wow.
That was wonderful.
Tell us how you really feel.
That was so... That was so good. I'm a still Khalid's line. That was so good. I think I need a cigarette. Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Wow.
How do you guys feel about it? Yeah.
Well, since you asked, there was a young man who was dating a young girl here near my apartment, and he was driving a truck that had two Confederate flags on the back that he was flying, and his truck was parked next to mine, and I saw it, and I just simply came out, and I didn't know who he was. So I asked my neighbor, I said, does your boyfriend know what those flags represent? She says, oh yeah. I said, okay. And then, I said, okay. And, so I went to, manager here, and I told him, I said, if that flag stays, I'm out. I will break my lease, and you can sue me and you will lose. Because that, and displaying them proudly, but there's no excuse for that. I mean, that was a group, as Ashley said, that was anti-constitutional. That was anti-United States, and they wanted to secede and form their own country. So that's not, I mean, the pride for what? We
they're so patriotic that they left.
Well, yeah, I mean, we
did. Yeah, how do you consider that to be a patriot?
That's
yeah,
like, you know, they hate celebrities and say, oh, I'm moving to Canada because I don't like it here. But that's exactly what they did.
I mean, I don't know. Have you ever met anybody who was named after Benedict Arnold?
No.
Right. I
mean, not at all. You know, not at all. And I know that we have people in the South that listen to the show, and we, you know, we appreciate the fact that we have Southern listeners.
We're not trashing everybody in the South. We're not trashing everybody.
No, because a lot of Southerners agree with this.
Right. We're talking about very specific groups of people. But go ahead, continue, Todd.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, Ashley. I mean, should we remove Confederate war statues?
Yes. First of all, they're not really statues that were built like to honor in memorial of the Civil War.
Correct.
A lot of them are built in the 1920s, and they're really cheaply made. That's like, and I don't support, I don't. They are. They're pieces of crap.
Yes.
Statues, literally, like in every way. They're even cheaply made, which is they were just thrown up there to intimidate blacks in the 1920s. It wasn't about honoring Civil War dead or anything. We have you know, cemeteries for Confederate soldiers. There's one on Johnson's Island, in Erie, across in the Sandusky Bay. There's a very beautiful Confederate cemetery for prisoners that died there. And I mean, that's honoring the dead. That's all you need. You don't need a statue. But the thing is, a lot of them were thrown up in the 1920s just to intimidate the black community and let them know their place.
I don't
support anything Antifa does or these, you know, left-wing thugs when they're marching around with baseball bats or anything. But when they tore those statues down, those things crumpled so easily. All they had to do was tie a rope around it and pull it. And it came crumbling, and it crinkled. It's a cheap piece of metal, and it obviously there was no love put into this. There was no craftsmanship. And yes, I believe in taking them down. We don't have to erase the history of the Civil War. We don't have to, you know, like destroy the cemetery on Johnson's Island or anything. But we don't need to have statues celebrating them.
Yeah,
I don't.
Right. Yeah, and Ashley is absolutely right, and I think, you know, we got like a minute left, so I just want to touch real quick on what she said, because I think it's a point that a lot of people don't know. All of these statues, for the most part, were not done around the time. As a matter of fact, a lot of the Confederate fighters, the Confederate generals at the time, after they lost the war, many of them did not want any statues or memorials or anything to be put up about the Confederacy. You know, I believe it was, the Confederate president, the former Confederate president, was one of the people who said he didn't want that. These statues and all of this Confederate memorials and all of that, for the most part, all came from the 20s on down.
Yeah,
and
the 20s was the height of the KKK and a lot of racial unrest. That's exactly where it came from.
Yeah, she's so absolutely right.
Yeah, why should we leave them up? They're, like I said, they're pieces of crap anyway. Like, if you wanted to have some kind of, you know, memorial or, you know, I don't even really have a problem with, like, Civil War reenactments, because at least shows it how it was.
I don't have a problem with that either.
And it shows, like, the two sides fighting with each other. And that actually shows what it was. These statues, honestly, the people that built them probably couldn't tell you anything about the person on it. They probably don't know much. And like you said, like, these people didn't even support being memorialized as Confederates. A lot of them just wanted it to be over with. They were ready. They threw in the towel. They surrendered. They didn't get their own country. I think a lot of their leaders did want this all dead and buried. And I don't think they would be on these statues.
All right. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast. And that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, that was an awesome, awesome, awesome really segment. Thank you so much for being so passionate about that.
Yes, Lord.
So, colleges and universities are experiencing a rough time now, and many of them are operating at a loss. For example, when you look at when colleges and universities do or are able to open back up, they have to spend a lot of money and a lot of put a lot of processes in place to clean the classrooms after each use, if you will. Maintaining social distancing. Many colleges, universities, and even schools, they had to close because they weren't able to offer the opportunity or option for students to learn online. Many colleges and universities still believed in the old way of, you have to have face-to-face in order to learn. But this has certainly changed the landscape in terms of how our education system will be moving forward. Kent State University is suffering a tremendous debt from this, and they've made significant cuts. And we see these cuts all throughout the education system throughout the entire state. Question becomes then that if you have a child that wants to go, let's say, to the Ohio State University when this pandemic lifts in May and we go into August, would you be comfortable having your child go to the Ohio State University or some other college or institution that's away from home during this being so close to this this pandemic situation? What are your thoughts, Ashley?
I don't know. It depends. I think closing them for the fall is pretty extreme. We don't know what's going to happen in the fall. I think that colleges should be at least planning to open and maybe seeing what happens. I don't understand why colleges can't just practice social distancing like everyone else. Maybe have people on campus but continue to do more virtual classes, or maybe have people sit 6 feet apart. I know that's hard in a lecture hall.
Well, would they be in the dorms?
But young people are not at risk for corona. People who are 18 to 22, I think it's short-sighted. Okay. I don't think that they should be already closing for the fall. I think they should be waiting to see what happens over June and July and then make that call.
Darvio, what are your thoughts?
So, I don't think I would be comfortable sending my kid in that environment, but I do agree with Ashley that it's a little too early to start shutting stuff down for the fall. I just think there's just more things we need to see. But let me ask you this, as an educator yourself, your thoughts on these schools doing more distance learning? I know for me, I got both of my degrees. From distance learning. So I was not on campus for either one of the colleges that I got my degree from. So, yeah.
That would be online. Yeah,
it was online, right. And so I've always loved online learning. Online learning was the way that I was able to even get my degrees in the first place, just like when I got my degree from Liberty, proud Liberty alumni, but Liberty is in Virginia. You know what I mean? So I think we should see more of distance learning, online learning. What do you think about online learning, distance learning, and the impact that it has on the college?
Well, one of the things that online learning requires is it requires a certain level of discipline for the student.
Very true. Very true.
And there are, you can have online learning, which is asynchronous, or for my East Cleveland listener, that's at the same time. so it's just like any other class. Let's say if I had a class Monday and Wednesday at 10 o'clock, that Monday or Wednesday at 10 o'clock that the students would actually log on, and then there would be a Zoom or a WebEx, or there would be a virtual classroom that they basically would come into, and I would basically do my presentation, do my lecture. But then it also requires the instructor to be a little bit more creative. You can't sit here on the computer and talk for an hour or an hour and a half as a lecture. I mean, you have to be a little bit more creative and be engaging with the students. At least I believe. The program that you went through, you probably did a lot more writing, and actually did more papers. Yeah. So and that's part of it as well. But when you're dealing with a 17, 18, 19 year old, and you're asking them to sit at a computer for 45 minutes to an hour at a time, I mean, you have to be able to grab that young mind made of mush and be able to catch their attention span, because it does require some discipline. And I'm just going to say this. I don't know if that discipline has basically been instilled in a lot of our young people in the high school, in the middle schools and high schools that we have here. Now, I know that there are some very strong high schools and middle schools in the area in which we live in. Okay. I'm just saying in general. Okay. In general.
You don't think these students have enough discipline to be in a widespread distance learning or online learning environment?
Well, let's just look at what's happening K through 12, right? I mean, when you have parents that are sitting at home working, and then you have the students that are supposed to be sitting at home working. I mean, the parent, now you know that your kid was a hellion, right? So it wasn't just the teacher, right? It wasn't the teacher.
It was your bad A kid.
Yeah.
When the teacher said Johnny can't read and Johnny's disruptive, and you want to go up there and bless out the teacher, now you see. I mean, it requires a different kind of discipline. It also requires.
You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. I want to jump in real quick. People don't realize. I remember when I first, like my first degree, I got in like 2010, and this is after I went to broadcasting school, which is more like a trade school. So I went to the trade school out of high school, and then I got my first degree in 2010, and I remember. When I first started doing online learning, people thought, oh, that's so easy. That's so much easier than being on the campus. No, it ain't.
I don't think it's easier at all.
Yeah, you have to have, like Todd, you're absolutely right. You have to have discipline, because no matter what you got going on, and I was always still working or running my company or whatever, particularly with the second degree, no matter what you got going on, you better find a way to get them homework assignments in on time.
Yeah, and it requires a the ability to research as well, because a lot of times and even when you're in a face-to-face class, and this is just a Toddism, this is not universal. I think that it's the teacher's responsibility is to guide and direct, but learning is a personal objective. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That if you have a hunger and thirst to learn something, the teacher is the resource that you use the Socratic method and you ask questions. But what happens in many instances, I believe, and this is just, again, this is just my personal view of what happens a lot in our educational system, is that people are looking for answers. They're not looking to ask the additional question. So that's scientific. What's that, Ashley?
I think it's very true.
Yeah. Scientific inquiry is not, okay, what's the answer? It's, okay, what's the next question? And that requires critical thinking. Anytime that you're teaching to a test, right, you're teaching for specific answers. This is how you answer this question. This is how you answer this question. Okay, and it's in a multiple guess format. Okay, where's Waldo? Oh, you found Waldo 9 out of 10 times. You so smart. But I believe online learning requires a little bit. It requires a different mindset, and this is where a lot of colleges and universities have to go to. But the question becomes: am I going to spend the money that I spend the first 2 years going to the Ohio State University during this pandemic situation, or would I backtrack and go to a community college or something that's closer to home where I don't have those excessive fees, right, for the first 2 years until this pandemic kind of flattens out.
I think that's smart for right. a lot of people, just pandemic or no pandemic. I think that starting at a community college and then saving money by getting your basic classes out of the way and then transferring is always a good option, especially if you're concerned about taking out huge loans and stuff. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Now, but here's the thing too, though, if that does happen, that means we're going to need to increase funding to community colleges because they're going to be overwhelmed with people. If there's going to be an overrun of people coming to community colleges, then we're going to have to, then they're going to need more resources. Go ahead, Todd.
And that's interesting because the state is cutting the funding for all institutions of higher learning. But what's right. interesting is that you do have some colleges who they've already developed the online environment. And so when this hit, it was just a seamless process to move over to a more of an online format. What the challenge is that many students just have not been prepared to do that. As you said, when you started your online learning, it was a change from when you had done your trade school format to say now you're responsible. Nobody's gonna look you in the eye and say, well, Darvio, did you do your homework?
Right.
You know, here it is. Everything is online. This is due this day. And if you're not technologically savvy and learn how to download your work to the, learning system,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Very good point. Very good point.
Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen
Show. The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the second hour of the Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen, with Ashley Herzog. Ashley.
I'm doing good tonight. How are you doing?
Yeah, you're off El Fuego tonight, right?
Yeah.
Darvio Kingpin Morrow.
What's going on, good sir?
Good, man. Good, good. So FCB is doing some big things. Numbers are growing. You also have a jazz station. Am I correct?
I do. FCB Cool that you can find on iHeartRadio.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good because, especially in this particular market, there used to be a jazz station, but now there isn't anymore. Yeah, well, it's FCB Cool, right?
That's right.
Make sure and you run our ads, the Todd Allen Show ads on there, right?
Absolutely. I promote everything. Awesome. Everything and everybody.
Appreciate it. So, folks, listen to FCB Cool if you just want some nice, cool out music. You're not going anywhere, so you might as well listen to some good jazz, right?
Exactly. And then when you get done listening to jazz, make sure you go to the Todd Allen Show podcast and listen to the show.
Right. There you go. So, let's talk about Joe Biden. It seems that Joe Biden had a problem, but now he doesn't seem to have a problem because the Democrats are discounting the problem because they're saying that the woman is not telling the truth, or they're questioning about whether or not the woman is telling the truth when she's saying that she was sexually assaulted. But it's interesting to me that what's good for the goose is not good for the gander when you're a Democrat. Ashley, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I heard on the radio today that this Tara Reid, however you say her name, who accused Joe Biden, is now kind of, I don't know if it's her or if it was the media that had put words in her mouth. She said she's not accusing him of sexual harassment or sexual assault, but of making her uncomfortable, which is not the same thing. Sexual assault and sexual harassment are crimes. With sexual harassment, there's some subjective criteria. Sexual assault is not subjective. Like, it's a very pretty cut and dry as far as the criminal code is concerned. Making someone uncomfortable is completely subjective. If that's all it was, I think it's much ado about nothing. But I wish the media had given this same kind of deference and the same kind of benefit of the doubt to Brett Kavanaugh not that long ago.
Right.
Obviously, it's a huge double standard.
Darvio, what are your thoughts?
So, just for clarification purposes, Tara Reid did say that Joe Biden sexually assaulted her. And I'm not going to get into detail because it's kind of graphic. If you guys want to know, you know, what she's alleging, you know, Google her name, go look it up. I think the whole uncomfortable part came from that was what she was saying at the very beginning because, and according to her, she wasn't comfortable telling the whole story at that particular time. So just as a point of clarification there. Now, here's my my thing about this. These stories are all very tough to deal with because they're he said, she said situations. And none of us were there. And it's a no-win situation. If you choose Tara side and she's not telling the truth, then you're tarnishing someone's name and reputation for nothing. But if you take Joe Biden's side and Tara is telling the truth, then you are calling someone who was legitimately sexually assaulted a liar. So I'm always uncomfortable with these type of stories. And let's be honest, there are, you know, a lot of times when women tell these things, they're telling the truth, but it's not unheard of for someone to make this stuff up. And I think in our community in particular, we tend to be a little more skeptical about these type of claims because we all know the story of Emmett Till, who right. was accused of whistling at a white woman, which wasn't true, and he got beat to death. There was what happened with Merlin Santana, who was the actor who played Romeo on the Steve Harvey comedy show, who was shot on a case of being shot and killed on a case of being falsely accused of harming a woman. There was a story of the guy in Garfield Heights, a suburb of Cleveland here, who was accused. I believe he was accused of rape or sexual assault, something like that. And this was a four or five star recruit going into college, you know, was going to play football. He lost everything and then come to find out it wasn't true. So we are, you know, we tend to be a little more skeptical of these issues generally just because of everything I laid out. But I think the issue is this is sexual assault allegations. This is very serious. It's a very serious allegation. And I know for me, anybody touch one of mine, you're going to have to see me. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether that's a woman I'm with or a family member or anybody on my team, any woman on FCB, you touch one of mine, it's going to be a serious problem. So this is something I take very seriously. But I do think with Tara, the treatment of her by the media has been shameful. She has been telling this story publicly for over a month. And other major media outlets outside of Fox have shown no interest in covering this story until very recently. Her first interviews were with hard left news outlets. So The Intercept, Democracy Now, Katie Halper's podcast, you know, like hard left outlets. The mainstream media generally, with the exception of Fox, wouldn't touch it. And I think that's shameful. I do think her case needs to be heard. And as I'm looking right now, there was a news that broke a couple of hours ago that from the Associated Press that two more sources corroborate her allegations. So let me just read this briefly. At least two additional sources have claimed that former Senate staffer Tara Reid told them about aspects of her sexual harassment and assault claims against former Vice President Joe Biden. According to a new report, the Associated Press revealed Saturday that its reporting uncovered two sources who spoke on the condition of anonymity and who added to the already mixed bag of individuals either corroborating or casting doubt on Reed's claims. One friend who said they knew Reed in 1993 said she told them about the alleged assault when it happened, according to the AP. The second friend met Reed more than a decade after the alleged incident and confirmed that Reed had a conversation with them in 2007 or 2008 about allegedly experiencing sexual harassment from Biden while working in his Senate office. So I'm not saying that Joe Biden is guilty. I don't know what happened. Clearly there's some smoke there, and she has much more corroborating evidence, including her mother, who called Larry King live in 1993 and alluded to her daughter having problems with the senator that she worked for. So there is some smoke there. There's a lot more smoke than what we've seen in other cases. And I'll say this as a quick, it's kind of a joke, but it's actually legitimate. I saw this post on, it was either Facebook or Twitter, where somebody said, the only time that people who are accused of sexual assault are deemed guilty immediately is when it's either Republicans or Black people.
It's true. Yeah. By the media, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Either Republicans or Black people.
And that's the kind of the question that I have. And again, I talked in another segment of, you know, as educated person, you just want to ask the additional question. When I look at how the Democrats have circled the wagons around Joe Biden, I mean, he hasn't even been appointed the actual runner yet. I mean, they haven't even had their convention yet, right?
Theoretically, if they wanted to throw him overboard, theoretically they could still do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you look at Nancy Pelosi, how she's come out and defended him. You look at he's now been supported by our former commander in chief, Barack Obama. They vetted him out, you know, before he was able to become vice president or run as vice president. When the situation was with a Republican, they were, you know, like cats. I mean, they brought the claws out and they were, you know, women ought to be listened to. And they were all about women's rights. But now that this is against their particular prize pony, now they have nothing to say. Now they want to.
It shows what hypocrites they are. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, and this, you know, they speak. There's a song that comes out that I forget what the name of it. It's talking out of the side of your neck, right? Nancy Pelosi is talking out the side of her mask. I mean, it's just horrible, the hypocrisy. Now, I have no problem if it was handled in the same manner. Right. If all these things are handled in the same manner, I would have no issue, because then there's no hypocrisy. Right. At least they would be consistent. But there's no consistency on this at all. And one thing that we have to get back to as a country, I believe, in the course of this pandemic and just in general, is that even if we have disagreements with one another, this abject hatred by people being partisan has got to stop, because it's ripping our country apart. We've got to stop being so dogmatic when it comes to partisanship. We're all Americans, right? And Ashley talked about, you know, the Confederacy and the problem that the Confederates have, that they're not American. They weren't American, right? But we're all American now. So we need to stop this partisan bickering and get to the business at hand, and that is moving this country in a more positive direction. So I don't know.
Don't really see that happening with Democrats, though. I don't think. I mean, I have a couple liberal writers that I follow on social media, you know, just to see what they're saying. And I mean, some of them seem like lovely people when they're not talking about politics.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought right there. We'll come back to that on the other side. We got to run the break, folks. You're listening to Todd Allen.
The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, before we went to break, you were talking about your liberal friends.
They're not really my friends. They're just people I follow on social media. But I do read their stuff, and I was saying they seem like friendly, nice people, you know, when they're not... on a rampage about politics. But just to compare what they were saying about Brett Kavanaugh and even about Trump, which Trump makes no bones about the fact that, you know, he's kind of a creep. Like the thing he said on the hot mic, like, I mean, at least he admits it. Not that it makes it okay or that it's a good thing, but at least, like, we're not, like, questioning whether it really happens. But just the way they treated Trump compared to how they're treating Biden, they're all like, oh, we don't know. We weren't there. We don't have the facts. I can't answer that for you. What happened to just taking a woman's word for it? I mean, it's such hypocrisy. And it shows you that it's one thing to be principled and to support women who make these accusations no matter what, and to show some consistency, but they're not. I mean, it's completely different standard.
And that, to me, that's shameful, because you're playing, this is not a subject you should play political games with.
No,
you shouldn't. Because either way, you could destroy somebody with this.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just...
Well, that's what I mean by the partisanship.
Because I don't mean to cut you off, Todd. Like, I've known women who've been sexually assaulted before.
So do I.
And I've wanted to beat up the dude. And, you know, they basically, you know, beg me to leave it alone. But, like, this is very serious, man. And this is not something that anybody should play politics.
No, it's not a pawn.
Right.
It's not like a playing card that you pull out to use to win a political battle. It really shouldn't be.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, you know, the point that I wanted to make in terms of this hatred just based upon partisanship. I mean, it doesn't matter if this person's a Republican or a Democrat, that when if there is an allegation, okay, let's take a look at it, and if it's found, if there's you know, evidence to suggest that there was, then deal with it. If there's evidence to suggest that there was not, or lack of evidence there is, then deal with it, right? But then let it go. I mean, this country was supposed to be designed to innocent until proven guilty. But there's also a way that you can actually, you know, either face your accuser or that your accuser has a time in court as well. But depending upon what side of the political aisle you're on, you're playing with people's lives with that. And I think that's just basically wrong. And I think it's based on hate. So let's move along here. Donald Trump has ordered a meat processing plant to stay open, and he's using the Defense Production Act to do it. When I'm talking to different people, their response is, to me, it's kind of incredible. Because, well, first of all, the people that I'm talking to, they don't like Donald Trump because he's Donald Trump. And so when he says that he wants to have the meatpacking plant stay open, there's been 100 cases of COVID in this particular plant. So many people are saying, close the plant, you know, close the plant just like you've shut down everything else, and then, you know, and then reopen later on. But basically what Donald Trump is saying is that, no, we've got to leave this open. We'll shut it down for a day or two and clean it out thoroughly. But we've got to keep this plant open because we don't want there to be any shortages of people, of the things that people need in order to support their families and their households when they go to the grocery store. What are your thoughts on that, Darby?
So I think in this particular instance, the president's kind of in a tough spot. I think it was the right thing to do, in the sense of you don't want our food supply chain to get messed up, because once you start having that, then we're really in trouble. You know what I mean? So you don't want that. And if I'm someone who wants things to be opened up slowly and responsibly, you got to make sure people can still feed themselves, because that goes all out the window. If people can't feed themselves, people are not going to listen. There'll be rebellion in the streets if people aren't able to feed themselves. So I think not just with this particular meat processing plant, but just in general, there's been several other instances recently where he's either used the Defense Production Act or has threatened to use the Defense Production Act to keep our critical food supply chain open. Which I think is the right thing to do. But again, I mean, it's a tough, either way, it's a no-win situation. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I think ultimately keeping our critical food supply chain open is the best course of action. And once again, this goes back to a part of the conversation that we were having earlier about rights and all this other kind of stuff. And I've said this on this show before. I think people don't realize how much power the executive actually has in America. You know what I'm saying? The executive has more power than you think they do. So Trump is using the power that he has in the Defense Production Act to keep our critical food supply chain going. And I think it was the right decision.
Ashley, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Darvio. I think it's a very tough call. You don't want to mess with the food supply. That's when things could really get ugly. If people are literally having trouble feeding themselves, especially when you've told them that they have to stay home. But the other thing is, I mean, it depends. So there's been 100 cases at this meatpacking plant, but a lot of times, I mean, they can have thousands of workers. So a lot of these numbers sound more frightening than they are when you put them in context. You know, 100 cases out of thousands of people is not that many. Of course, you know, you don't want to have any cases, but it depends. I mean, it's a very hard situation. But yes, we have to have food.
So yeah.
It's obviously you can't have anyone at work. You cannot have anyone on the job who has coronavirus.
Right.
This is where we need to be utilizing testing, taking temperatures diligently. We have to be, I'm sure that the experts are already dealing with it better than I can, but yes, they have to be very, very careful.
Yeah. I think that, well, two things. It's kind of interesting that when we talk about people wanting to, relax or to start opening up the economy again, and then those who don't, it's kind of interesting from the side of people that don't want to open it up. They want to have the stay in order in place, but yet they want other people to put themselves and their families at risk.
Right.
I mean, it's like, no, I don't want to go out, and I think that we shouldn't, but you should, because you're in a you're in one of these areas that we have to have. And so I'm willing to put,
yeah.
So I'm willing to put you and your family at risk, but not mine. That is kind of, I have a fundamental issue with that. But him maintaining this plant to be open, I think that there's starting to be some food shortages or some meat shortages in the market. Some supermarkets are having some issues because of the shortages in meat production. But I think that overall, I think that I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get criticized an awful lot. I think overall, Donald Trump did what he could have done at the national and at the federal level. And as you said earlier, Darvio, that there's only so much that the executive can do, that the president can do, and most of what he can do is basically international. But it's the House of Representatives and the Senate are the ones who are the ones who can, the House controls the purse string, so those are the ones who can give as much money as they want to. Has to be approved, of course. But what's interesting about this whole thing is that there have been a lot of things that have been snuck into these proposals. Yeah, well, we're going to give you this money, but we're also going to go into our own digital currency. Well, who would have thought about that, right? But again, you hear what the Democrats are saying about this emergency, so that they can pretty much allow their pork products to go through. Pardon the pun, even though we're talking about meat, their pork barrel bills to go through to pass in order for people to get checks. And it's a real interesting situation. So I don't know. I'm checking Darvio to make sure that I'm not running over, because you chastised me last time because we didn't get to break last time. But
well, go to break now.
Go to break now. Okay, yeah. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, 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 what's poppin', what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we rock to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, tell our listeners how they can follow you.
You can find me on Facebook as myself, Ashley Herzog, and on Instagram as AshleyHerzog85.
Darby, you.
At D the King Pin on all social media platforms, DTHEKINGPIN.
And folks, you can follow us on all social media platforms, The Todd Allen Show, A-L-L-Y-N Show. Now, I've come across an article from USA Today, and I kind of want to get your opinion about your collective opinions about this. The title is, Will Coronavirus Cause a Baby Boom, or is that just a myth? Prepare for the jokes, if not babies. Says the stay-at-home coronavirus orders are unprecedented in America. Oh, no, they're not unprecedented because they had the flu pandemic in the 1900s. Anyway, but
stop being a nerd.
Fake news. No. But the speculation about what may ensue 9 months hence is not. Prepare for a baby boom. At the least, prepare for jokes about a baby boom, or maybe not. Perhaps it's all an urban myth propagated, no pun intended, mostly by baby boomers, then giant cohort of Americans born in the years after World War II, when everyone came home and got busy. Nevertheless, it's fun for people to speculate about a baby boom in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. After all, what else do they have to do? Stuck at home and bored. Speculate that, not the other thing, because think about it, even in a mild version of corona could make one sick enough to take to bed and not with baby making in mind, right? So the question comes up, along with the jokes, every time Americans are under pressure and telling themselves, we're in this together, even when we're not. The interest is such that people on Twitter are suggesting new names for the supposed coronavirus cohort. Coronials, quarantines, baby zoomers.
Baby zoomers. I like that. Baby I like zoomers. That. Baby zoomers.
Are we all agreed that babies born 9 months after COVID-19 are going to be called coronials? And in 2033, 34, they'll all become quarantines. Interesting. I mean, I can see in certain communities that, you know, a baby born, certain communities might be COVID. So anyway.
So stupid. It's so stupid.
Darvio, do you think, I'm going to ask you first. Do you think there could be a baby boom after this? Nine months?
Yes. I have seen women on social media, on Facebook in particular, make posts saying, I wish I had some in-house blank. Wow. So I have seen several women make that particular statement.
Who are you following?
My Facebook friends are a cross section of America, sir. So if you have some in-house blank and y'all there all day, every day, come on, man. You know what's going down.
Well, the interesting question, Ashley, is that, I mean, with the stay-at-home order, does that mean that people can run out and get those birth control or not? I don't know.
I don't think that there's going to be a baby boom, and I'll tell you why.
Really?
It depends. Okay, yes, I think Todd just made an interesting point. I think there will be people, birth control, like long-term methods that are typically more reliable, are going to become kind of harder to access for people. They're not going to their doctors as much. They're maybe not able to get refills as fast. So there might be some, you know, monkeying with the birth control, like not taking it like you're supposed to or running out. So that could play a factor. Second, I don't think people are necessarily going to be having more sex, especially people in long term. Obviously, people are not having, like, meeting people on Tinder and meeting up for one night stands because you can't. There's nowhere to go. You know, they can't, like, go rendezvous in a hotel room.
Or in a hotel, but, right.
I mean, obviously, it's not a good time for people to, you know, be taking, you're not going to be out at a bar taking someone home. So you're not going to get pregnant that way. I don't necessarily think that people in long-term relationships are going to be having more sex. If anything, I think there's a lot of people that are probably getting annoyed with each other by now and are fighting a lot. Also, I think people, and I know not everyone thinks ahead, and, you know, like Darvio said, his Facebook is a cross-section of America, so there's people that aren't thinking ahead to this, but I think there's also a ton of economic anxiety right now. And that usually leads to people having less, not more children. The other thing is people don't understand about the baby boom of the 1940s and 50s. It wasn't just because all these men came home from war. That's not the only reason. A big reason is that it was a very easy time in America to raise a family. It was an easy time to be middle class. A lot of these GI Bills and people being able to afford their own homes led to people having more children. Like my grandparents, neither of them had a degree. My grandfather actually never graduated from high school, and they had six kids on one income, one construction income, and they could do that. And they owned a home. They owned a car. That was the 50s for you. So maybe if we want to see people having more babies, we need to figure out how to make it easier to be middle class. Not poor, but middle class.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think you make a very good point on that, Ashley. Like when there's economic anxiety, not only do people have less children, but there's also less sex. I've seen women say on social media that it's hard for them to get turned on if they're worried about keeping the lights on. So
right. And I think, well, and people who think ahead, if they're planning their pregnancies, now would not seem like a good time.
Right.
Because we don't know how long this is going to go on. Nobody wants to be in a hospital giving birth right now. I mean, a lot of people
That's a very good point.
It's going to happen. But I mean, if you had a choice, this is not an ideal time to be pregnant and going to the doctor.
Yeah.
And going to monthly appointments. So there's that.
And Todd, I would argue that thought process that Ashley just said about the thoughtful planning and all of that, that's a woman thing, I think, because we don't care. We don't care.
But it could be true that a lot of women will be lacking reliable birth control right now. So that's something to consider.
Yeah. Well, I think this gives new credence to the double mask technique. That you know, you wear a mask and she wears it too. I don't, you know. I don't think that there will be a baby boom, but I think the divorce rate is going to go up.
Well, it has in some places. I saw a statistic, and I haven't seen it in America yet, but I've seen it in other countries. Like the divorce rate is going up during the pandemic because, like Ashley said, people getting sick of each other.
Right. You know? So I don't necessarily think that people are having more sex right now. I think there's equal chance that they could be having less.
Right. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. What do you think, Todd?
Well, I don't think that there would be a baby boom. Well, I don't think that there would be a baby boom from the standpoint that I don't think that people... like Ashley said, I think people are more planning it out more because, again, you know, how are you going to go to the doctors for regular checkup? I mean, now you see that the states are starting to ease it up a bit. But for a while there, for a couple of weeks, I mean, there was you could not go to your doctor if it was not COVID related.
No, right? He was doing telehealth.
Yeah, telehealth. Hey, how many months am I pregnant? we didn't get that class online, right? To be able to tell how long a person is pregnant, So I think that this is a difficult time for relationships, especially if relationships are based upon material things.
Yes,
right?
Very true.
Right.
And that makes it extremely difficult. My wife and I, we even had this conversation, just yesterday. I would be willing to have another child, but she was saying, no, this is not something that she doesn't feel comfortable with this environment in the pandemic, being not only just being pregnant at this time, but bringing a child into the world at this particular point in time. And I think that a lot of people will have those types of thought process, as you did say, Ashley, because, well, you would hope that rational people would have these conversations and plan out the pregnancies anyway. But as Darvio said, if a person's bored, if a person's in there, and if it's a good strong win for a lot of guys, I mean, they'll be ready, and the consequences be darned, and think about the consequences later. And the last thing you want to hear during the pandemic and when the people are in a close relationship is when the guy says, oops, that's not.
That's bad. That's real bad. Yeah. Real, real bad.
Well, folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. This is one of our favorite segments. It's You Big Dummy. Take it away, Ashley.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Stupid!
The reason that bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
You big dummy.
All right. Our big dummy of the week does not come from our favorite state, which is Florida. It actually comes from what I consider the second dumbest state in the union. Anyone have any guesses?
Michigan.
No.
Was it California?
No, but that's close.
New York.
Texas.
Texas.
There's a lot of wacky, I shouldn't say dumb. There's a lot of wacky stuff that goes on in Texas. I used to live there, so I know.
Right.
Okay. So, this woman needed a refund from Burger King. And at some point you have to question what it's worth to get your $4 back if you even spent that much. For instance, would you try to go back into the building and cuss out the staff to get your refund while the building was on fire?
What?
Yes. A Burger King in Texas caught fire. So this woman, and you can see it in the video. There's a video on Isaiah Carey, Fox 26, which seems to be in the Houston area. I used to live down there. So you see this Burger King in flames with big plumes of smoke coming. This is not a small fire. This is a big fire. And the staff is running outside. And this woman refuses to move her car. And then she gets out of the car, starts screaming at the staff, saying she doesn't care that the building is on fire. She wants her refund. So.
Wow.
What would you do to get your $4 back from Burger King?
That's ridiculous. That is, and if you guys go see the video, she lost her mind. And then she started cussing them out. Ashley and I were talking about this during the break. She started cussing them out and denigrating them for working at Burger King. That's why you work at Burger King.
Well, yeah, you got shouting so much about how they work for $10 an hour and they're just trash. Who works at Burger King? But yeah, she's throwing a fit about what, like
$4-5. What? Yeah. Six or seven tops.
At the most.
At the most.
A lot less than that. Maybe she ordered off the dollar menu. It could have been like $2.
Right. So you're denigrating these people for work. That's why you work at Burger King. But you're the one ready to lose your mind over $5.
And then she calls them trash as if she's not like screaming like a total, you know.
Lunatic.
Yeah.
A total lunatic.
Exactly.
Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And unfortunately, this is in Texas, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was in Texas. I knew Isaiah Carey, who is a hilarious journalist. He's the guy, I don't know if you guys ever saw that video of the it was a black guy, the journalist who was being real professional, and then a bug like flew at his face.
Yeah.
And he started cussing him out. That's Isaiah Carey.
Right.
So he's a hilarious journalist, but he shared this on, and I believe he is out of Houston, I think. And he shared this on his page, and it was just crazy to me to just see this woman just losing her mind, and for her to just immediately go denigrate them. That's why you work at Burger King and all this other kind of stuff. That shows you.
Yeah, as if she doesn't sound like total trash doing
exactly.
This.
Exactly. And you trashing them because of their place of employment. You know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous. But at the same time, you sweating them over $4.
So I mean, if I was in the drive-thru and the place caught on fire, I would immediately get out of there. And I would probably just go to a different drive-thru and order something else and just say, whatever, you know, things happen.
Right. You just charged that $4 to the game, man. You just lost that. That's okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, things happen in life that you can't always control. And, you know, $4 at the most isn't that big of a loss. So
right.
I'd probably just drive to the next drive-thru, not demand a refund from a store that's on fire.
Wow.
Right. What are they supposed to do? Go back in there and get her money?
Yeah, that's what she expected them to do.
That's ridiculous. What's your thoughts, Todd?
Well, I mean, I can't. I mean, this is obviously. I mean, this is. Did it say how old this person was?
How old she looked like?
She looked like she was in her early 20s, maybe.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
between 20s to early to late 20s, something like that.
That explains it. And she probably thought she was justified in demanding her $4 back. She was within her legal.
And she said. And they was telling her in the video, the building's on fire. I don't give a damn if the building's on fire. Like,
she's like, I moved my car. Now I'm giving me my refund.
Wow.
It's like, that's ridiculous. Like, why don't you pull over to the side? If you really that pressed for that money, why don't you pull over to the side, get out the way, wait until the fire department get there, put the building out, put the fire out. Then you can go back in there and get your little $2.50.
Yeah, but she basically expected them to die so that she could get her $2.50 back.
Right. But the thing about it that really just disturbs me the most, I can't get over the fact that she's like, well, you work at that's why you work at Burger King. Like, really?
Yeah, that's the most unbelievable part.
Well, yeah.
Your broke bleep ain't sitting up here sweating them over little money. Go ahead, Todd.
Well, not only that, I mean, you just ordered something from here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Very good point, sir.
It just, well, wow. Young people. Millennials. No, it's not millennials.
No, they're not millennials. This is the generation.
If she's in her 20s, because she could have been in her early 30s too, that would make her a millennial. But if she was in her 20s, particularly early 20s, that's Generation Z. Those are the ones eating Tide Pods and licking ice cream tubs and putting it back in the refrigerators and doing the coronavirus challenge, like that fool we talked about before who I think we talked about this on the show, the dude who was going around licking toilet seats. No, we talked about it on my show, The Outlaws, which you can find on all podcast platforms. This dude, it was a social media influencer, which is frightening. He was going around licking toilet seats as a coronavirus challenge and ended up getting the coronavirus.
Wow.
Oh, well.
moron.
Where is he now? Have they followed up with him at all?
You know, I haven't looked at the story since. I just thought it was he took a picture of himself licking a toilet seat, and we're talking toilet seats in public restrooms.
It's disgusting.
Like, you shouldn't even
as a punishment.
You shouldn't even. Yeah, why are you tempting fate like that? But first of all, you shouldn't even lick your own toilet seat in your house.
Yeah.
Let alone a public one.
Did you just say lick your own toilet seat?
Like, you shouldn't even lick your own toilet seat.
You shouldn't lick a toilet seat. Period.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
right. The fact that we're gonna have to clarify is scary.
Right.
People are really out there doing this.
Yeah, yes. Be careful what you say. We don't want people to misconstrue that you're telling people to go lick toilet seats.
Whatever. No, I'm not telling you to go lick toilet seats. I'm saying it's bad enough if you lick your own toilet seat, but to go lick a public toilet seat is worse. That is so disgusting. So that dude ended up getting the coronavirus. So there's a lot of people out here doing stupid stuff, which is why y'all listen to You Big Dummy.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the top ones of the year, Ashley. I think.
Yeah, I agree. This is.
Yeah.
Make sure y'all go look at the video. Actually, you have it posted up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Darvio, DARVIO. Make sure y'all go check that out.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How's Idris Elba doing?
I don't know. I haven't looked that up.
Because I mean, you had him, and then you had Tom Hanks. I mean, you haven't heard anything of the celebrities that you know,
go ahead, Tom.
Or the New York Tiger, the tiger in the New York Zoo. I mean, celebrities and zoo animals can get tested, but not everybody, right?
Now, I did hear about we did hear about Tom Hanks, like him and his wife are in the clear. I don't know if they're back in America yet because they were in Australia, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know if they're back here or not, but they, as far as I know of, they've all healed up.
And I think that I would like to see the media give more attention to people that have recovered. I mean, you know, the death toll numbers are huge, but I would like to see the recovering numbers, you know. I mean, I would love to see
that. Recovery numbers are even more huge. And there's probably a lot more people who have recovered that we don't know about because they never went to the hospital. They never got tested.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, that's the problem. Go ahead, Ashley.
I know that people are saying, oh, maybe the death toll is higher because, you know, we didn't test people who had already died. Well, it's actually probably lower because, I mean, the overall death rate is probably lower than we think it is because there are probably many, many more people who had it. As we're seeing now from antibody tests, there's probably much more people that had it that either didn't know or never went to the hospital, never got tested, just thought they had a cold. And yes, so I think there is some room for optimism.
Well, I know, like I said earlier in the show, when we interviewed the county medical examiner, he believed that the numbers were actually underreported. So we don't, but again, like I said earlier, we don't know. We don't know. We have no idea. We know nothing. You got a minute left, sir.
Last words, Ashley?
Don't lick toilet seats. If the building's on fire, just drive away. Don't try to get your refund.
Darvio.
My last words are the fact that I learned something today, and that is that Todd would get it on with surgical mask on if he had to.
Only with my wife. Folks, just remember, we are what we continually do. Excellence then is not an act but a habit. And remember, we're all Americans. Let's stop this political bias bickering. And let's get on the hand onto the job of making this country better for everyone who's here. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. Until next time.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.